everyone, and welcome to Ask Margot Today, a show where we address the sticky matters of life in an effort to find an enlightened answer. Thank you for joining me. I'm Margot de Coatsworth. I'd like to make a little announcement today, which is that we have had a fun time this last weekend at the Kapiti Wedding Expo at Paraparam in the Memorial Hall. I talked to lots of people about Ever After Elopements, which we run at the milk station in Otaki, in the 1870s chapel there, offering all-inclusive teeny tiny weddings so that people can have a stress-free romantic micro-wedding and then spend the rest of their getting married budget on a fabulous honeymoon. That was my advice to them. It's a great idea for those who want romance, but not the big production. It's for people who are happy to have every detail taken care of for them so they can just arrive and enjoy their wedding. Don't forget, if you want to ask about anything, questions for the show or weddings or any other thing, email me under the contact tab at margotunlimited.com, Margot with a T. Now to our first question for the day. Margot, I've been working with a coach who uses NLP and Ayurvedic techniques to help me stay calm and present when things get stressful. It does help in the moment, but the same issues keep coming back. The same patterns, the same triggers. I'm starting to wonder, is this as good as it gets? There's a movie called that, isn't there? My answer to that is simple. No, it is not as good as it gets. I feel really strongly about this. There is a big difference between learning to live with something and actually changing it. And I think we've been hoodwinked into accepting that many of us don't even know the second option exists. Managing how you feel in difficult moments is a skill. If you can be calm instead of reactive, that's so important. But, and this is a big but, if the difficult moment keeps showing up, if the anxiety is still there, if the pattern is still running, then surely we have to ask ourselves the question, are we treating the symptom or are we going to the source? Because you cannot change something from the outside in, you just can't. What you must do is change it from the inside out. There isn't any other way. When I first discovered that we could go directly to the subconscious and sort our issues there, to the place where patterns and blocks and beliefs actually live, it was like finding a key I didn't know existed. The key to open the door to what you want, to address what's producing the moment in the first place. Think about it this way. If water is coming through your ceiling, you can put a bucket under it. You can get very good at emptying the bucket. You can even get to a zen place about the job. But the leak is still there, and it will keep leaking. Why would you take a remedy that only deals with the effect? If you haven't dealt with the reason it's there, what's the point? Fix that roof where it's leaking. Don't just empty the bucket. Awareness is always the beginning of change. But if you are still in the same patterns, if the same things are still messing up your life, then something deeper has not yet been addressed. And that something lives in your subconscious. It's not complicated. It's not mysterious. It's simply where the programming is for all of us, where the old decisions were made. It's where the new ones are established. That's how we are built. The subconscious responds to new instruction. It always has, and it always does. The question is whether we are giving it good instructions or not. So to answer your question directly, no, this is not as good as it gets, not even close. Real change requires you to go deeper than the surface, deeper than the breathing, deeper than the coping. I'm not saying those things aren't relevant. I'm just saying they don't fix it at the source. because once you change what's running underneath, you won't need to manage what keeps showing up on the top. That's where the real work is, and you are absolutely worth going there and sorting it at that level. Our second question today is, why shouldn't I go back to my ex? Sometimes it feels easier, familiar, and part of me wonders if it might work the second time. Well, here's a line I quite liked when I first heard it. If you see the same tree twice in a forest, it's because you are lost. What often draws people back is not clarity, it's familiarity. You know this person. You know how it feels. You know the rhythms, the conversations, even the problems. And when something is familiar, it can feel safe, even when it wasn't any good for you. Your mind always gravitates to the familiar until you make the unfamiliar take its place. That's a rule of the mind. It doesn't mean that every relationship is beyond repair. There are cases where two people genuinely grow, change, and come back together in a new way. But it's not usual for this to happen. More often, people return to the same dynamic with the same habits and the same reactions and the same points of tension. And they hope for a different outcome. You know what that means? If you do the same thing and hope for a different outcome, they call it insanity. And hope on its own is not a strategy. So the real question is not, do I miss them? Because you probably do. The real question is, what has actually changed? Not what's been promised, not what's been said, but what has changed? Because if nothing has fundamentally shifted in behavior, in thinking, in how the relationship is handled, then you're not walking into something new or better. You're walking back into something known. The same tree. And if you find yourself there again, it's worth asking, am I moving forward or am I just circling? Going back can sometimes be a way of avoiding the discomfort of moving on. Change can be hard, even if part of us desperately wants it. The unknown can feel harder than the familiar, even if the familiar was not right. So we return to what we know, rather than stepping into what we don't. Ask yourself, who are you now? What do you want now? What standard are you holding now? Just because you've done something before, lived something before, doesn't mean you have to choose that same thing now. This is a new day. And you get to make any choice you want because you are the boss of you. Just ask yourself, do I want the qualities this person exhibits? So rather than asking, should I go back? Ask, am I moving in a direction that's right for me? Or am I returning to something I've already outgrown? Because if you keep seeing the same tree, it's not the tree that needs to change, it's the direction you're walking in. Our next question. Margot, based on everything you teach, what's the ultimate checklist for someone who isn't just looking for a date, but for a lifelong adventure with the right person? The idea that life and romance should be an adventure and that ever after in a relationship with somebody should be an adventure is great. There's often a certain theatre to early romance. People present themselves well. They're charming, attentive, perhaps even a little bit dazzling. And this is all part of the dance. It's always been so, and that's great. But genuine interest lies beyond that. Does their attention remain when there's nothing to gain? Do they follow through on what they say? Do they make space for you, not just impress you? Because it's very easy to create a moment, but it's much more telling to create continuity. A person who's genuinely interested in you will not leave you wondering where you stand. There's a steadiness to their behaviour. You feel considered. you feel included. If one moment they're entirely present and the next moment they're distant or unavailable, that consistency is a clue. Love is not built on moments, it's built on patterns. And patterns reveal the truth far more reliably than charm ever will. Because you are choosing someone for a life, you're not choosing based on charm or chemistry or how things are in that moment, or whether they have a pretty face. You're choosing based on what will stand over time. So here's what to look for. Firstly, are they interested in you? Not occasionally, not when it suits them. Do they ask about you? Do they listen? Do they remember? Because interest is the foundation of connection. Nothing's more important. Secondly, are they consistent? Do their words and actions match? Do they follow through? Are they steady? If a man does not follow through or do what he says, you do not want him. And the same for women. Consistency builds trust, and trust is what allows something to last. Thirdly, how do they handle themselves? This is an interesting one. Look at how they deal with pressure, disappointment, inconvenience. How do they deal with anger? Do they take responsibility? Do they blame, avoid, deflect? I just want to say those again. Blame, avoid, deflect. They tell a lot. Fourth, what's their relationship with themselves? Do they like who they are? Do they take care of themselves mentally, physically, practically, financially? Or are they looking for someone else to stabilize them? Because you are not here to fix someone. If you are there to fix someone now, you will have that job for life. People must get their stuff sorted before they enter into a close relationship. If they don't, then you will bear the fallout of that for the rest of the relationship. All of their unsorted debris. Fifthly, how do they speak and behave around others? Do they treat people with respect? Waiters, friends, family? Because that is not separate from how they will treat you. It's a preview. I think this is last. Do they make space for you? Not just physically in their life. Do you feel included, considered, chosen? Or do you feel like you're fitting in around them? Because a life together requires room for two. Oh no, not quite there. Can you move forward together? Do your directions align? Not perfectly, but meaningfully. Do you want similar things from life? Do you approach life in a compatible way? Because attraction may bring you together, but direction is what keeps you on the same path. Is there ease in your relationship? Not perfection, but a sense of being at ease around them. Can you be yourself without editing? Can you speak without hesitation? Because a lifelong partnership should not feel like effort at every turn. And finally, this is most important, are you choosing them or are you trying to be chosen? Because those are two very different positions. If you're trying to be chosen, you will overlook things. You will adjust yourself. You'll stay longer than you should. If you are choosing, you observe clearly. You decide. You move forward or you don't. And that's where your power sits, because a lifelong adventure is not built on hoping someone will be right for you. It's built on recognizing when they are and being willing to walk away when they're not is a possibility. So the checklist is not complicated and it's longer than I thought. I'll give it to you again. Interest. Consistency, responsibility, self-relationship, behavior, inclusion, direction, and ease. If those are in place, you're not just dating, you are building something that can last for the duration. Our next question is about money. Margot, I've recently come into some money from my family, enough to buy a house and invest in my business. How should I think about dividing it? Is there a percentage split you recommend between investing, spending, and giving? I thought this was such an interesting question and I was curious about it, so I took some outside advice. Apparently, the most important thing to understand is this. Before you decide on percentages, you must decide purpose. So the first question is not what percentage, it is what is this money for in my life? Once that's clear, a simple structure works very well. Let's look at money in three lanes: foundation, growth, and flow. First is foundation, that's your base. So for many people, this is where a home sits. Stability, a place to live, something that anchors you and removes pressure. If buying a house is part of your plan, that often becomes the first and largest allocation because it changes your day-to-day life immediately. It reduces uncertainty, gives you a base from which to do anything. The second is growth. This is where you invest your business, income-producing assets, opportunities that have the ability to return more than you put in. This is not about spending. This is about multiplying or growing. Ask yourself, what has the capacity to grow? What is aligned with your skill set? Where can this money actually work for you? And then the third is flow. This is where you enjoy it and where you give. And I like the fact that these two are put together. There's no value in holding money so tightly that you never experience what it can do for you. A portion of money should move through your life, experiences, travel, things that matter to you. And alongside that is giving. Not as an afterthought, but as something intentional, because giving does something important. It keeps money in motion. It connects you to something beyond yourself, and it places you in a position of having enough to contribute. In terms of percentages, a simple starting point could look like this. 50 to 60% on your foundation. That's home, stability, however you see that. 20 to 35% on growth. That's your business or your investments. And 10 to 15% on flow. That's spending and giving combined. It's quite a low one, isn't it? Interesting. It's not rigid, of course. If your business is a clear opportunity, you may increase your percentage there. If your foundation is already strong, you may allocate differently. The percentages follow the purpose, not the other way around. One more thing to be very aware of, when money arrives, particularly family money, there can be a sense of urgency, a feeling that you must do something with it immediately. But you don't have to. You can let it sit. You can think clearly and make decisions from intention and not from emotion. Because this is not just money, it's positioning. It's the ability to set up your life for the future in a way that supports moving into that space. So be deliberate. Build your foundation, direct your growth, and allow some flow. And in doing so, you're not just spending money, you're placing it where it can support the life you are choosing to live. Our next question. What about the idea that there's no greater waste of time than taking advice or defending your actions to people whose life you don't want? That sounds quite strong. Is it fair? Interesting. It is strong, but there's a lot of truth in it because advice is not neutral. I hear people give rubbish advice all the time. It comes from a person's personal experience, their choices, their standards, and their expectations. It reflects how they see the world and what they believe is possible. So if someone is offering you guidance, it's worth considering, where has their thinking taken them? Do they have the kind of life you respect? Do they make decisions in a way you admire? Do they handle things in a way you would choose for yourself? Have you had great advice before from these people? If the answer is no, then you have to ask, why would I take direction from this person? You're not dismissing people, you're just simply being selective about whose input you allow to shape your life. Because there's a second part to this, which is equally important, defending yourself. We often do this. Many people spend a great deal of time explaining their decisions, justifying their choices, trying to bring others on side. They say, well, I'm doing this because, or I've decided this because, or I just think it's the right thing to do. And often the person they're explaining themselves to is not someone whose opinion should carry that much weight anyway. So what's really happening? They're seeking approval. They're trying to reduce discomfort. They're attempting to be understood by someone whose opinion should not even matter. Who's in charge of your life? Are you directing it, or are you adjusting it based on the reactions of others? Because if you're constantly looking outward for agreement, you will find yourself pulled in different directions by many different people, because everyone's got an opinion. Whereas if you are clear within yourself, you can simply say, this is what I'm doing, this is what I've decided, and move forward. Of course, there are people whose advice is valuable, mentors, experts, people who have achieved what you want to achieve, people who think well and act well. Their input can be extremely useful. Listen to those people. There's wisdom in their advice. You choose them. Don't open the door to everyone. So the principle is this. Be selective about whose voice you give weight to. Be discerning about whose advice you follow. And be measured in how much you feel the need to explain yourself. Just don't listen to silly people. Because your life is not a committee decision. It's yours, and you are the one who ultimately decides how it's lived. I don't know if we've got time for this next question, but we'll go fast and do it because it's interesting. It's about friends and the future. Margot, there's a saying, show me your fridge and I'll show you your health. Show me your books and I'll show you your goals. Show me your calendar and I'll show you your priorities. Show me your friends and I'll show you your future. Is that really true? Well, it's a very simple idea, but it is quite accurate. Because what sits around you is not accidental, it's evidence. We often think of our intentions as the defining factor in our lives. I want to be healthy, I want to grow, I want to succeed. But intention is the first step. It's what you do next that counts. Your fridge, for example, is not just a place where food is kept. It's a reflection of your habits. What you reach for when you're tired, when you're busy, when you're not thinking about it, that's what shapes your health. Not what you say you will eat, what's there. The same applies to your books. What are you reading? What are you exposing your mind to? Because that's what you're feeding your thinking. If your shelves are empty or filled with things that do not stretch or direct you, then your thinking will tend to stay where it is. Whereas if you're regularly engaging with ideas that challenge and expand you, that begins to shape you. Then there's your calendar. This is one of the clearest indicators of what truly matters to you. People often say, I don't have time, but your calendar will show you exactly where your time is going. What is scheduled is what is prioritized. What's not scheduled is often simply not happening. People will quite often say to me, I need to see so-and-so, and I say, just book it in. Even if it's weeks away, book it in, and then you've done your part. Then we come to friends. We all know about the influence of the people around us. Conversations matter. Standards matter. What you tolerate matters. And over time, you begin to align with the environment you're in. When someone says, show me your friends and I'll show you your future, what they're really saying is your direction is being shaped quietly and consistently by the people around you. None of this is meant to be judgment. It's about awareness, because once you see this clearly, you have a choice. If your fridge doesn't support your health, you can change what's in it. If your reading and media consumption does not support your growth, you can choose differently. If your calendar doesn't reflect what you say matters, you can reorganize it. If your environment is not aligned to where you want to go, you can begin to adjust it. You're not locked into any of it. Your life is not built from what you intend occasionally. It's built from what you do consistently. I'm speaking to myself on all of these matters as well. I don't want to not walk my talk. We see quite enough of that in life around us, don't we? Well, thank you for joining me today. Those are our questions. We'll finish as usual with the word, our message from the universe. I want to tell you, or remind you, because I've probably said it before, about another offering I have, which is Ask the Word. This is where people can ask me to seek a direct answer from the universe for any question they have. If you're seeking guidance, direction, a solution, a way forward from God, from the universe, for something personal to you, I can seek that on your behalf. You can find details for this on my website at margotunlimited.com under the Word tab. So let's finish. Give the universe the last word. You must look out for those little jumps of joy that you come across when considering something. They are your guides, your leads, your way forward into your own personal life design. Thank you for sharing this time with me.
This program was made with assistance from New Zealand On Air for radio broadcast and through the accessmedia.nz website. Thank you, New Zealand On Air.